Chapter 33, This New Place. We have settled now into our Birmingham life. We live in a tidy brick house on one of those tidy tree-lined streets I saw from my window in the hospital. It is lovely, orderly, calm, and quiet. Too quiet. There are no children playing cricket in the alleys, no men in the guest room arguing politics, no women on the back porch having a good gossip. My father, who was always the friend of all friends to the men in SWAT, has many visitors but few real friends here. My mother, who cannot speak English like the rest of us, wanders perplexed through the shops, inspecting the strange foods for sale. Gashal spends a lot of time alone in his room, wishing, I think, for his old life. And the other day I heard a tall, who was the sunniest nature of us all, crying because he had no one to play with. We are just a few feet away from the next house, but for all we know of our neighbors, it might as well be a mile. As my father says, we live in a neighborhood, but we rarely see the neighbors. Whenever we go out, people approach us and ask to take a picture with me. I don't mind. I understand that the people who come up to me are the same ones who gave me support when I needed it and who give me courage now to keep going. It's odd to be so well known but to be lonely at the same time. Meanwhile, we have all adapted little by little to this new place. My father wears a handsome tweed blazer and brogues now when he goes to work. My mother uses the dishwasher. Gashal is having a love affair with his Xbox, and Atal has discovered Nutella. I still go to the hospital for regular physiotherapy sessions to learn how to move my facial muscles, and I'm told I may have more surgery ahead, but I don't think about that too much. One night our family was out for a walk in the main shopping district in Birmingham. I was marveling at all the different types of people in this city. Unlike in Mangora, where everyone looks the same, here there were all kinds of people. Freckle-faced boys in soccer jerseys, black women with long braids, men in business suits and women in business suits, conservative Muslim women in burqas, and young Muslim women in jeans and headscarves. All of a sudden, a young man called out to my father from behind us. We turned, and I saw that he had the dark features of a Pashtun, but he was wearing Western clothes. "Sir," I heard him say to my father, "I am from your tribe back home. I know who you are." My father extended his hand, happy to see a fellow countryman. The boy pointed at me. "Sir, we all cried for your daughter. We prayed for her," he said. "But what you are doing is not safe." My father looked puzzled. "You cannot be out this late in Birmingham," he said. "This city, at night, it can be dangerous." My father and I looked at each other. Then we explained to my mother what the boy had said. The poor boy was confused by our reaction. My father hugged him and thanked him, but we couldn't quite explain. How could this quiet, orderly place be unsafe compared with what we had come from? At my new school here, I wear a British schoolgirl's uniform, a green sweater, striped button-down shirt, and tights, and a blue skirt. Most of the other girls wear their skirts short, but my skirt is down to my ankles, and I wear a headscarf as well. Luckily, there are a handful of Muslim girls in my class who do the same, so I don't stick out quite so much. But some of the other girls roll their skirts up even shorter as soon as they arrive at school and let them down again before they go home. And I think, what an interesting country this is, where some girls are free to cover their bodies and others are free not to. Here we also have projectors and laptops, videos and Wi-Fi, and classes such as music, art, and computer science, and even cooking, which I hate. It was a bit of a shock coming from Pakistan, where school was just a teacher and a chalkboard. At times, I wish I were back home, in that simple classroom with no computers, but then I think of how my old friends would love all this fancy technology and these special classes. Sometimes I feel sad that my old friends don't have all the wonderful things students have here, and sometimes I feel sad that they have what I don't, one another. There's something of a gap between me and my new schoolmates. Sometimes they make a joke, and I don't get it. And sometimes I make a joke, and they don't get it. Their manner with one another is also quite free compared with the way girls are in Pakistan. I want to join in, I want to have fun, but I don't quite know how. And I cannot be too cheeky. I'm expected to be good. I am a good girl. I always have been. But now, I tell myself, I must really be good. So I take extra care with what I say and do. No one else is telling me to limit myself like this. If anything, the teachers here are always encouraging me to be free, to feel at home. But I'm not really free to be like other girls my age, because of the way the world sees me. When you have such a public role and so many people counting on you, I believe you must always act in the way people expect of you. My life has become extremely busy. I'm making books, documentaries, and speeches, and I'm meeting interesting people, doing social media campaigns, and engaging in humanitarian work. I get to do so many exciting things and go to so many exciting places, but so much travel while trying to keep up with my studies and exams isn't easy. I am only human, and sometimes I get tired. Some days I wish I could just sit on the couch and watch Mind Your Language or Skype with friends, but I take the work I'm doing very seriously, always. I haven't got a best friend here like Muniba, or even a rival friend like Melkinor. But girls at my school are very kind to me, and I'm beginning to make friends. They invite me to go bowling, or to the movies, or to their birthdays. They are lovely girls, kind and fun, but it's not the same as it was back home. There, I was just Malala. Here, at least at the beginning, I was Malala, the girl who was shot by the Taliban. I wanted to just be Malala again, a normal girl. At first, I wondered how I could ever be friends with these girls. I've seen and experienced things they couldn't even imagine. But as time went on, I realized they've had experiences I can't imagine. What I'm finding is that we have much more in common than we have different. And every day we learn something new from one another. And every day I feel a little bit more like plain old Malala, just another girl in the class. But when the day is done and everyone files out for their buses, I think for a moment of the scramble at the end of the day at the Kashal school. I think of how we all tumbled out of the building into the dyna that bumped and bounced along the crazy, crowded streets of Mingora. Chapter 34, The One Thing We All Know. A few things remain the same in this world. One, I still fight with Kashal, or rather he fights with me and I oblige him. We fight over who gets the front seat on the way to school. We fight over what station to listen to on the radio. He tells me I have a big nose. I tell him he's fat. He tries to give me a punch when we pull up in front of his school, and I lock the door as he tries to get out. I may be an advocate for free speech and human rights in public, but with my brother, I admit, I can be a dictator. Two, Muniba and I have gone back to our silly old feuding. We Skype as often as we can, but we seem to start each chat the same way. Oh, Malala, she says, you've forgotten all about me. And I say, Muniba, you're the only one who's forgotten about me. After we've gotten that out of the way, we get down to having a good gossip. Sometimes talking with Muniba and my friends at home makes me more homesick. I can almost smell the wood smoke drifting up from the valley or hear the horns honking on Haji Baba Road. I've seen many other places, but my valley remains to me the most beautiful place in the world. I will go back to Pakistan eventually. But whenever I tell my father I want to go home, he finds excuses. No, Yanni, he says, your medical treatment's not complete. Or, these schools are good. You must stay here until you've learned all you can. He doesn't say the one thing we all know. It will be a long time before we can go home. Going home is the one thing we don't talk about, especially now that Fazula has risen from the head of the Taliban in SWAT to the head of the Taliban in all of Pakistan. I know this new life is sometimes hard for my brothers. They must feel as if a giant wind suddenly picked them up in Pakistan, blew them across the globe, and set them down here in this foreign place. As for Atal, he doesn't understand all the media fuss around me. I don't understand why Malala's famous, he said to my father. What has this girl done? To the world, I may be Malala, the girl who fought for human rights. To my brothers, I'm the same old Malala they've been living with and fighting with all these years. I'm just the big sister. My mother, though, sometimes treats me as if I'm the baby, not the oldest. She can be very protective, and sometimes, out of nowhere, she will come over and hug me and cry. I know she's thinking about how she almost lost me. Often I catch sight of her wandering in the garden out back, her head covered by her shawl. She feeds the birds from leftovers she keeps on the windowsill, just as she used to back home. I'm sure she's thinking of all the hungry children who used to eat breakfast at our house before school in the morning, and wondering if anyone's feeding them now. Sometimes my father cries, too. He cries when he recalls those first days after the attack, when I was somewhere between life and death. He cries at the memory of the attack itself. He cries with relief when he wakes up from an afternoon nap to hear his children's voices in the yard and realizes that I'm alive. I don't get angry very often, but I do get angry when people say he is responsible for what happened to me, as if he forced me to speak out, as if I didn't have a mind of my own. If only they could see him now. Everything he worked for over almost 20 years has been left behind. The school he started from nothing, the school that now has 3 buildings and 1,100 students. He used to love nothing more than to stand at the gate and greet the children in the morning. The Kashal school carries on, and each day students pass through that gate, but he's not there to see it. Instead, he goes to conferences on girls' education, and he speaks out for peace, as he used to in SWAT. I know it's odd for him now that people want to hear from him because of me and not the other way around. Malala used to be known as my daughter, he says, but I am proud to say that now I am known as Malala's father. It's not safe for us to go to Pakistan. That is true. But one day, when we were homesick, we realized we could bring Pakistan to us. Friends and family come to visit, and Shazia and Kanay, who both go to college in England, stay with us during holidays. My mother is much happier when she has a house full of guests and extra chairs around the dinner table. As her happiness grows, so does her willingness to try new things. She has begun to learn English again. She has also begun appearing in public without her shawl covering her face and has even allowed herself to be photographed. My father, meanwhile, has taken on a new responsibility at home. Recently, I teased him that while he and I are busy speaking about women's rights, my mother is still doing the cooking and cleaning. Now, he cooks every morning. It's the same thing every time, fried eggs. His cooking is full of love, but not so full of flavor. He has done some brave things in the past, starting a school without a coin in his pocket, standing up for women's rights and girls' education, and standing up to the Taliban. But now my brave, proud, passionate father has taken on the pots and pans.